Hello, I'm Carrie Farrell. You're watching Life Minute TV with Joanne Butler.
Hey, Carrie. Here we go.
He's the famous frontman of the bands Jane's Addiction and Porno for Pyros, the mastermind behind the Lollapalooza Festival. Others just refer to him as the godfather of alternative rock. This legend has recently come out with a 35-year retrospective of his life, music, and art that looks into his world outside of the works of Jane's and Porno for Pyros. 68 tracks worth of his alt-rock rarities and artistic explorations from his first band, Psycom, in the early 80s, all the way to his most recent, Kind Heaven, on which he collabs with his wife, Eddie Lau Farrell. This is a Life Minute with Perry Farrell.
Hi, Perry.
Hi, Joanne.
You look great, as always.
Thank you. You do, too.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, you, how are you doing?
Hanging in there.
Good.
Good. I'm doing great now, talking to you. Thanks so much for doing this.
It's my pleasure.
So how you been holding up with quarantine?
It's as scary to me as it is to everyone else, you know. But I try to make the best of it, or I try to utilize the time. And as a musician and as an artist, man, I've been making track after track after track. So I want to almost tell you that I don't know when there'll be a time like this again to just be creative and stay creative. So I'm trying to maximize the time. Yeah.
Awesome. That's good news for us. So great. So tell us about the Glitz and Glamour box set. Tell us all about that.
Well, as the pandemic started, I also got a new team of management team that proposed an idea to me. And it was to kind of organize all my art, all my pictures, all my music. I had music that was blown to all four corners of the earth, you know? Sometimes by design, because I like to sometimes just drop little, what you would call small batches of music, or do a show that's a really small batch for 100 people. And so I had music everywhere. They said, we've got to organize it. Why don't you organize it? And so they put together all my, this is solo stuff, all my solo stuff, beginning with, no, I can't exactly say it was all solo, because there's, I have memoirs in a box set of records. So I've got 9 records, one of them, which is a hologram record, like real vinyl. And as it spins, the hologram moves, and it's trippy. I worked with this artist by the name of Zoltar. He's from London, and incredible art for the box set, memoirs in a book. And the memoirs are really just all pictures. You know, like back in the day when people had photographs, you know, Kodak photographs.
Yeah.
And Polaroids. So I had boxes of these pictures. And when I showed them to my team, they were like, I would tell them a story of the picture, you know, and they go, no, you have to make a book out of this. So I thought, yeah, it's time to do it. I mean, I always thought to write my memoirs at 60, and I'm now turning 62.
Wow.
So I'm right there. It's time. I've got some good stories to share.
62. Gosh, God bless you. You don't look it.
Thank you. Well, I work hard.
Yeah. Tell us about that. What do you do? What's your secret?
Oh, like beauty regimen?
Yeah.
Well, starting with mentally, I always try to stay in a good mood. I always try to stay creative and kind and loving. And that'll make you beautiful.
Awesome. It's working. It's working for sure. Tell us about the collabs on this box set too. You collab with a lot of people.
You know, I'm working on a new track, a new remix with the great Sasha of Sasha and Digweed fame. So Sasha is working on a remix of a song called Milky Avenue, which is in the box set. And it was a track that I wrote with Flea. So that's how it works. I love where I'm at. What I was going to say is I love where I'm at right now. I started 35 to 40 years ago putting out my own music. I put my first record out for like $500. And I would try to distribute it out of the back of my car, you know. This is when record stores were all around. And the good ones in LA, the underground ones, I would go and just come in with a record. And I go, would you like to buy my records? And the guy would say, well, look, I'm not going to give you anything for them, but you're welcome to put them in the bin under P, you know. So that's how I started. But the trip about it is, these days, I'm back to that. So I now have a team that we put out our own records. That's the box set. It's the first one. It's on Last Man Records, but I own the publishing and, if it's going to succeed, it's all on me, you know, whether it succeed or fail. And I can put out music anytime I want. I don't have to wait a year. I don't have to make it an album. I don't have to kiss anybody's ass at the record company who doesn't love music. Something else very special about the box set is I went to Dolby Studios after I'd finished producing it with Tony Visconti, who was David Bowie's longtime producer. And I had it mixed in Atmos surround sound 7.2, which movie makers will know. It's really, when you sit in a movie theater, it's the best sound you can get in that it surrounds you. So that album is mixed and it's given to you in the box set on a Blu-ray. If you have a home entertainment system that can handle it. Most people don't, but I just thought, I'm just gonna do it. Cost me a pretty penny, but I think we're all heading towards home entertainment systems and club systems that are in the round. Mm-hmm. And so now we can at least play that record.
Yeah, that's cool. Your music is a lot about, you know, philanthropy and this, it doesn't just sound great and amazing. It means a lot too. Was that always the case for you? Because I've heard you say, you know, when you first started, it was all about having fun. Did it evolve over the years or was it always like that?
Yes. Well, you know, I find it interesting when I listen to the early recordings of Psycom. So the songs were very heavy. And, you know, of course there are a lot of them about, you know, drugs and sex and partying, but also one of the tracks that I'm going to start performing again is a song called Hokahe. And it was about, I thought it meant it's a fine day to die. And I thought it was a cry that the Native Americans would say just before they went into war. But I have come to find out it really means let's go, man. So I was always kind of siding with indigenous people, the underdog, disenfranchised, and the poor. As I feel that the trick in life, can I tell you the trick in life? I just thought about this the other day. So I really have a rhythm going now. You work hard. Yes, you know, you should be looking to amass a fortune. And then you take that fortune and you start to help people with the fortune. You can, you know, of course, you know, you want to have a great life for you and your family. But then also you start to help the world with that fortune because you are fortunate, you know, by the grace of God. So that's how I like to look at it.
Beautiful. What was you said a little bit, your childhood like growing up? Did you always know you wanted to be in music?
Okay. It's funny you asked that question because this morning I thought to myself that when I was a little boy, I sang nonstop. I go back to my brother and sister. They were mad for music. My brother roomated with Jimi Hendrix for a time.
Wow.
My sister ended up to marry the bass player for Richie Havens. So if you ever saw the movie Woodstock, Richie Havens sings that song, sure. Freedom. So we all loved music so much in the house. We had that stack of 45s, you know, back in those days, and we'd play records on the front porch in Queens, in Flushing, and people would walk by, and, you know, that's when the Great British Invasion happened. So the Beatles, you know, affected me at the age of, you know, 5. I had Beatle boots. I had real Beatle boots.
That started your style.
Yeah, but as we got old, as I got older, my family broke up, and I ended up living with my father's second wife, who I don't think she wanted me to even live, but she definitely didn't like me making music. She'd always tell me, shut up. And I would go around the house whistling and singing all day. And she'd say, shut up.
Aww.
So for a while there, I mean, no. So when I came out to California, I had no intentions of being a musician, but I loved music. Like, you know, I followed music the way any passionate music lover would, going through their teens, you know, like music was everything to me. I didn't think I wanted to actually be a musician. I just loved it. And when I got out to California, punk rock, I was living in here in LA, and you'll find this funny, but I was living with a man who wanted me to be an actor. So he was managing me. He wanted me to act. So I took acting lessons from a protege of Lee Strasberg, who taught the method.
Yeah, so my son went there actually.
So I would go and take these classes and do method acting, but then they'd send me out for a toothpaste commercial, you know? And I quickly learned, like, I don't want to sell no damn toothpaste. I want to write about wild stories and, you know, about life. So I dropped the course and I moved out, and the rest is history.
Wow. Interesting. Amazing. How did you get hooked up with your first band?
So back in those days, this is 1980-81. The musicians had their own magazine. One was Music Connection. And then there was a magazine that was free called the LA Weekly. And all the musicians, everybody that was interested in the nightlife that was coming. The Weekly came out on Thursday. And then, of course, Friday and Saturday night, it would list what's going on. So not only would it have the shows, but it would have in the back, you know, band looking for singer. Must like Psychedelic Furs and Susie and the Banshees, you know? So I would, the ones that were into the same type of music that I was, I would go there and do the audition dressed kind of like what I thought they would be needing for a lead singer. And then sometimes it was really goofy, because sometimes I would kind of go out on the fringe of what I really loved about, you know, the bands that I loved. One time there was this ad for a band looking for a singer, must love 13th Floor Elevator and the Blues Magoos. So I thought, oh, they're kind of psychedelic garage, right? So I combed my hair down in bangs, and I bought myself in a thrift shop, like a paisley shirt. And I showed up like, man, I'm psychedelic too, you know? I didn't get the gig though. My bangs kept going, boing, boing.
What other bands did you love, or would you call influences?
Oh, for me back then?
Yeah.
You know, Joy Division was a major influence. The Doors, The Germs. You know, then of course in the back, I had in my back pocket, you know, Hendrix, the Stones, the Beatles, Velvets. This goes on. You know, we could talk for days and days and weeks and weeks and years and years.
I want to know, did your stepmom see you become famous?
Yes.
What'd she say about that? Did you rub it in her face?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Why not?
Did she ever tell you, were they proud of you?
No, never. No, she wasn't. No, we were not on the same team. It's a long story, but it's in the memoirs.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. What about the guys from Jane's? Do you still hang out?
Well, I just got some tracks this morning from Stephen Perkins asking me if I'd sing on some drum tracks that he just laid out. So yeah, we are in touch with each other and, looking into the future and see where we can get in there again and rock out.
Cool. any other artists of, newer artists of today that you enjoy, that you think are good or?
One comes to mind that's very fresh, Starcrawler. So they're a group out of LA and actually even Venice Beach, where I used to live for many years. Jim Morrison lived there. Anyway, Starcrawler are new, on the rise. I did a track with them. It's in the box set. So we wrote a song together and we were gonna perform at the Roxy together with the Kind Heaven Orchestra and Starcrawler when COVID hit. But we did get, we wrote a song because we intended on playing that song together at the Roxy show. So unfortunately the Roxy show didn't happen, but the track is in the box set. And now it's getting remixed. This is the system. This is what we're doing now, Joanne. I'm doing a beautiful song, and then I give it off to the amazing remixers around the world. They could be from Israel or Palestine or Chicago. And then we have a beautiful song that's been remixed. And then now they're saying to me, and would you do an acoustic version too? So now that I have my own record label, why not?
Yeah, why not? That's awesome. What about Lollapalooza? Tell us about that for those that don't know. What compelled you to start it and how has that evolved over the years?
Well, I was compelled to start it. Jane's Addiction had been out on the road for years, and I wanted to give it a break. So I told everybody this, this is going to be the last tour and I don't know what I'm going to do after that, but that's it. That, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but I'm officially not in anybody's band. But William Morris said to me, well, you can do anything you want in this last tour. I said, anything? Yeah, man. I mean, you're there. So I just started giving them a list of requests. So I want to have a gallery, an art gallery, and I want hot air balloons, and I want, vegetarian tacos, size of an elephant's trunk. So that, and then that was very successful, but unexpected that William Morris came back to me and said, all right, the Chili Peppers said they will, do the next one. And I slowed him down and I went, what one are you talking about? The next Lala, you got to do it. Okay, I'm in. That's how it worked. That's the evolution.
It's amazing. It's just, nothing since Woodstock was like that. So that was, it's amazing.
Well, it was different than Woodstock in that it traveled.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had bathrooms. A couple of other differences.
And then how did you did it virtually, right? The last one?
Yes.
How did that go?
I thought it was amazing. Michelle Obama actually honored us with her presence and Lori Lightfoot, Mayor Lori Lightfoot from Chicago. So, and Chuck D went on there. You know, I had a whole slew of Sal Masekela. I had a whole slew of friends that joined me, and I brought Janes and Porno for Pyros back. But we got to do a lot of music, and what I've been, you know, my heart tells me that we should have a lot of discussion now. People should be talking, sharing great ideas, you know, how to revolutionize the world, how to retool it, refresh it. And I feel that we started a good dialogue. Now we're coming up to the moment where we have to decide whether we're going to do Lollapalooza this coming August.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to encourage people, get vaccinated. If you get vaccinated, it's going to go.
Yeah.
So it's really up to us. If we all take care, social distance, keep doing that, keep wearing masks, vaccinate. I mean, if President Biden says July 4th is his timeline, mine's a first weekend of August. That's when Lala is always.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
What's it all about for you? What inspires you? What propels you as an artist?
Well, life. Life is just so amazing. I've never stopped loving living. And so every aspect of life is a potential song. Love, falling in love, having a wild time, taking a trip, you know, with your friends to the Grand Canyon. And then you can have negative, you can have kind of political rebuttals of things that are going down. And there's so many things that are going down right now. It's easy to get negative and write extremely powerful, but, you know, aggressive songs. But I don't like to dwell too much on it. I prefer to, as I say, come up with solutions. So there you have it.
So good, so good. And you said love. Tell us about your wife. You've been together for so long.
Yeah.
Testament to relationships.
No. We're coming up on our 20th.
Wow.
I've been married for 20 years.
I thought it was longer even, but that's long. Right. Wonderful.
Yeah. So I want to renew our vows. So everybody mask up and vaccinate, because I want to have a vow renewal, but I want to make this great party for it. But I can't do it if everybody's got COVID. So.
Yep. Well, what's your testament to making it work? A good marriage.
Good marriage is, I'm sure you'll hear right away, compromise. Remember your vow. So if you're a man whose word is golden, you won't mess that up. You won't mess your reputation up. And you have to understand that sometimes both of us, you know, one guy kind of slides a little bit. You don't look at him and then get angry at them for sliding. You are tied to them for life. You better help them stop sliding and to get back to, you know, the center. So, you know, we're constantly propping each other up. And therefore, we're always attractive to each other. We're always there for each other.
That's cool. That's great. What about parenting? Any lessons there?
Well, I mean,
juggling.
If you get a parent lesson from me, I would tell you, oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, I like to tell my children what's up, what I think is right, what I think they should do. And then if they don't listen to me, I let it go. Because they're still learning the lesson. If they screw up, you know, they got that stupid tattoo on their thigh. I told you.
Yeah.
But the only reason I say that is because this morning I didn't notice that my son, he was in the backyard in his underwear because he's just having an orange, whatever, picking orange off the tree. And I go, is that a tattoo? And he goes, yeah, I told you about it. Okay, but he goes, yeah, I know it sucks. He goes, Sean, you got a tattoo gun. I go, oh my God. Did Sean give himself one? He goes, no. I go, schmuck, you should have let him give himself one so you can see how he does with it.
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah.
You do have tattoos. Do you regret them?
No.
Your kids can't get one.
No, I didn't say he can't. I said before you do, make sure that it's a good one. So, I'm going to tell you something really funny. So my son, for a long time, I couldn't tell. No, he actually did not like me. This is just what happens when they become teenagers. They just don't like you.
Yeah.
You just got to deal with that. Because they're looking at you like, you know, you caused all this, or whatever you tell me is just lame and I don't want to listen. I want to do what I want to do. Is exactly what, like me, you know. So he's, it was my son's birthday. I said, what do you want to get? He goes, all right, I know what I want for my birthday. I want a tattoo. And I go, well, what, of what? Like, because if it's going to say, you know, I'm a commie or something like that, like, let's talk about it. He had Ritual tattooed on the back of his neck, just like mine. And that was the first time that I realized that my son admires me.
So
I found the best tattoo artist I could. I won't tell you where and who because he wasn't of age yet, but I let him do it. So sometimes I chip out because he's there without a shirt and he's got his back to me and I see the same tattoo and he's got the same type of shoulders as me. And it's so wild to see a person that is kind of framed like you, it looks like you with your tattoo.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. Yeah. You have a great sense of style. You always have. Where did that come from?
Well, my mom used to love to dress. My sister used to love to play dress up using me as the mannequin or as the doll. And but sometimes she dressed me up as a woman. So that's where I got my, like, hey, I don't look bad as a woman. and so that's where I got my this beret might work tonight, you know. But as I got older, this is something that I can share with everyone. If you are androgynous by nature, it's great to kind of dress androgynous. Kind of riding the line of, you know, what a man or a woman might wear. But as you get older, as a man, start to try to look less like a woman because older guys don't look great in dresses. Older lady. So I try to look more butch. How am I doing? I'm pretty butch today, right?
You look good. You always look good. It's a sign of a good-looking guy when they can dress like a woman and pull it off.
Yeah, but not in the older days. I at least for me, I like being butch.
What's your favorite comfort food?
Favorite comfort food? I'm gonna say sushi. Or matzo ball soup.
Really?
Yeah, if I'm sick, if you give me a bowl of matzo ball soup, I won't die.
What's something no one knows about you, if there is anything?
Nobody knows about me. Oh, that one of my teeth came out back there.
Really?
Yeah, but it was a crown. Yeah, it popped out.
You have such nice teeth. Now, no one would ever know that.
They used to suck. But I, you know, that's what I mean. When you make, when you, you know, do well in life, you can change f***ed up teeth. But then you got to help the world. You know, take care of yourself, but then you got to turn around and help the world.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. What are things in life that make you happy?
Oh, going on a snowboard ski trip with my family. Yeah, I'm going Friday. No, Saturday. Going for a run. But I'm vaccinated and I'll still wear a mask.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going Saturday. So.
You're going skiing?
No, getting vaccinated.
Oh, vaccinated. That's awesome.
After that, I'll go skiing.
That's amazing. I really hope that they open this up, man. Open up floodgates, man. Every age. I mean, I understand why the front lines, because they have to help us. And if they have COVID, how can they help us? Cool. The aged, I kind of think personally that it was to test it out on some people that might be on their way out. Forget about it. Open it up to everyone, because you see what happened in Florida.
Yeah.
Let's just have everybody getting vaccinated now so we can get back to at least hugs.
Yeah, hugs, exactly. Right? I think you need to run for president. I think I'd like to see that.
I would not like to be the president. Would you?
No, but I'd like to see you do it.
You know what I would be, though? I would like to be the king of Israel.
How come?
Because if I was the king of Israel, then I would be the king of Israel. And then I would I would make Israel the place where the entire universe comes to worship together. God, you know, everyone would be welcome. And I would be throwing these amazing parties there, build the third temple.
See?
Yeah.
What's something that's, you know, that you want to do that you haven't done yet? What do you think's next for you?
Honestly, there's so much work to do on the earth. As I say now, I'm very focused on it. So I've started a charity, and I'm going to be looking for hot spots around the world, like as an example, that plastic island in the middle of the ocean. Let's get rid of that thing and let's figure out what to do with plastic. So, I mean, you know, work never ends when you're a mensch.
You're definitely a mensch. What about your name? Not everyone knows that your name isn't really Perry Farrell. How did you come up with that name?
Perry Farrell?
Yeah.
Oh, well, my true name is Peretz, which means the voice of the land. It's Hebrew. My mom named me two names, English, it's Perry. Hebrew is Peretz. But my last name, Bernstein, just didn't sound like a rockin' name. Perry Bernstein. So my brother, who I told you is the wild cat, his first name is Farrell. So I just, I've always kind of felt a little bit of an outsider, a little bit on the peripherals of life, you know, watching. Certainly when I came to Los Angeles, I was a newcomer, and the underground scene was so thrilling to me, but nobody really knew who I was. So I would just kind of stay in the corners watching the groups and the girls and the guys. And so I came up with Peripheral, using my brother's first name and my first name. Perry Farrell is really Peripheral.
Stephen, that's cool. Yes. You are absolutely so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I've been a longtime fan, so it's so nice when you get to talk to somebody and they're just as lovely as you had hoped. Anything else you want to tell us that we didn't cover, you think?
No, we'll catch up later.
All right, cool. Thank you so much. You're so beautiful person, and have a great skiing trip. Be safe. Wear a helmet.
I will. I have to, definitely.
Good.
Bye.
Thank you.